Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Big Show Summer Fun Edition. I am Jeff Gammon. I'm your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And I'm sure everyone noticed the extra little bit that I added in there, Summer Fun Edition. So Patrice came up with the amazing idea of using a different format this summer instead of just having a break. And so that's exactly what we're going to do. And at first, let me introduce everyone. Then, Patrice, I'll let you tell everyone what we're doing. And Patrice, since I'm already talking to you, how are you?
I'm tired. No, I'm good. It's been a nice week. We had our planning day, our quarterly planning day today. So, three teams, three products, trying to figure out the next 3 months. It was a nice challenge. We managed somehow to do some of it. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't say we did a good job. No, we're okay. We're okay for the next couple of weeks, so that's fine. It's an exciting time. The weather is it was really cold last week, basically, like last weekend especially, and really cold means like 50s, 60s.
Mm-hmm. For you're summer, talking Fahrenheit.
Fahrenheit, yeah. For summer, like it, whatever, like 14, 15 degrees Celsius, something like that. Maybe up to 20. For July, it's quite cold and we're freezing. But today it's nice and toasty again. So all good. Like it just took a little break.
Just mixing it up a little bit for you.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I'm good. I have a lot of vegetables coming up on my little balcony garden. I'm harvesting zucchini. I have tomatoes coming, like some other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So nice. Life's good.
Nice. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Thank you. The wife and I got back from a road trip to the Great Pacific Northwest. We got back a couple of days ago. So I'm sick of driving, but it was fun. Got to see a lot of good things, kind of stayed off the main roads and saw a lot of interesting parts of the country, visited with family. One of the highlights of the trip was seeing a group of about five or six bald eagles in Oregon.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
And I had my camera out. So that was quite a present. That was a gift from Mother Nature. So that was a lot of fun. So happy to be home and not driving in a car, and great to be with you.
Well, and it's great to have you back. And you mentioned the bald eagles, and that reminded me, we haven't had a Boulder Wildlife Report in a long time. And as I'm thinking about that, I think it's because there's just not much happening with the wildlife right now. I have a feeling that when everything was really slow and people weren't out because of the lockdown, that's when we had the mountain lions just roaming the streets and coyotes walking around and large herds of deer filling up neighborhoods. And then the lockdowns ended. And now we suddenly have basically the same level of traffic and activity we had before the pandemic. And the animals that I'm seeing now is just squirrels and rabbits. Like the raccoons that were just terrorizing the area, they've been gone for over a year.
And I guess wow. For them, the fun is over, I guess, for them.
Yeah, well, I
moved on somewhere else.
Yeah, I think a lot of them went into the mountain lion stomachs.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of fat and happy mountain lions.
Mountain lion barbecue.
Yes. So, so anyhow, it's squirrels and bunny rabbits. And that's wildlife right now.
Oh, the mountain lions need food. So.
That's true. Yep. And we are still seeing plenty of missing cat and missing dog signs up. And in Boulder, it's sad to say, those While they appear to be missing pet signs, they're actually memorial signs, because if your cat or dog has gone missing in Boulder, you're not going to see it again. It's just gone.
Yeah.
What's a nice neck for some animal?
Yes. Yes.
So if you're in Boulder and you have a cat, you should have an indoor cat, is what you're saying.
Yes. And if you have a dog, unless it's a really big dog, you shouldn't leave it outdoors unattended.
Oh, man. Nope. That goes for other areas as well.
Yep. Yep. So, hey, on that happy note, Patrice, tell us what we're doing today.
Yeah, so as we talked about last week, we're doing the Summer of Fun. If you haven't listened to that that episode, highly recommend it. We talked quite a bit about, and it sounds like a really crazy, like crazy topic, because how can you even talk about like cables and the worst and the best cables for like an hour? And we still did. Exactly. Yeah, so we're taking time off from the usual shows, and we're like the slow news times we're using to talk about some fun stuff that we wanted to talk about. I've clearly stolen that from Relay FM, and I'm giving them credit for it, but I don't care. Like, we're stealing left, right, and center. Like, if it's a good idea, it's a good idea. I don't care.
Well, and Patrice, I will continue to give you full credit for it.
Okay, that's fine. So today is a topic that I put on our list. I've been thinking about that a little bit. So, you know, I mean, and it's less about, like, we're going to talk about TV shows, a specific genre of TV shows, even sci-fi shows mostly. But it's less about the shows themselves and what we think about them and how fun they are and all of that. I mean, it might come up here and there. What I've been thinking about is there are different, like, quite different visions in the, let's say, more popular shows and the bigger franchises like Star Trek and Star Wars and The Expanse, and maybe there will probably be a couple others that come up. There are quite different visions about the future. Like, there is the Star Trek, I would almost say utopia. It's not 100% a utopia. There is conflict and there is some stuff going on. Like, nobody is perfect. Like, even the people in the Star Trek future are not perfect. But I would say it's a quite like utopian story. Mm-hmm. Like people like no money, like you can get whatever you want, like the pursuit of knowledge and life fulfillment is more important, all of that. You have the Star Wars future, which is more like, okay, we have a million different civilizations and everybody is kind of fighting to stay alive and make money, and there's the evil empire and all of that. So more like, I would say more a darker view on the future. And then there is The Expanse, and that one I found personally quite interesting, because it's like, it looked really heavily on, okay, how is humanity gonna change if we move out into the solar system? Or later on into other systems. And my opinion, quite a realistic view on it. Like, sure, there's science fiction, there's some fictional stuff. And there are probably other, those are the three that I came up with. There are probably other shows that you might have watched or seen that might give you an idea. But the idea is, what do we think? Which direction are we gonna go? Like, if we survive that long, maybe we don't. Which direction are we going to go? Are we going to go the Star Trek, we figure everything out and everything is cool? Are we going to go to Star Wars, like everything is dark and people are fighting? Or are we going to go more the, like, let's say, middle ground? Okay, sure, like, there will still be fighting, there will still be commerce, people will change, but overall, we're still progressing. And that's kind of the idea.
And I thought this was an awesome idea.
Yeah, we could talk for, 12 days about this subject? It's a very big subject. It's really 12
years, probably.
Yeah, 12 years. A lot, we could cover a lot of ground with this.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as I said, I want to make it less about the shows themselves. I try to summarize them in like a couple sentences. It's more about our views on which direction we're going Or maybe a completely different direction. Like, it doesn't have to be even one of the three. It could be a completely different one.
I think it's a great subject, given the pictures we just got from the James Webb Space Telescope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what it made me think of is, wow, in 20
wow,
years,
we're tiny.
What are we going to learn from the James Webb over the next 20 years about the universe that might change the way we think about life in general? So I think it's timely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's like, if you look at it, and I think someone in the Slack room said that, maybe it was you, and even maybe it was even on Twitter, I don't remember. But he basically, I think it was him, he basically said, like, if you look at that, right, look at the amount of galaxies, and all of those are galaxies. They're not like individual systems, whatever. Those are like massive.
Yeah. Like, yeah, they're like, not solar systems or galaxies.
Yeah, it's like, given the amount of that, like how can there not be life out here? And there's probably, he said, like, there's probably another planet out there with like stupid little biological beings on it fighting over stupid shit.
Right.
Take mm-hmm. that, I'm paraphrasing there, but I think that was more or less the sentiments.
Mm-hmm. So I think one thing, when you bring up a subject like this, the first thing I think of is, what if we did connect with life in some other world somehow? Mm-hmm. How would the human race react? And I get, maybe because I'm getting older, I'm a lot more pessimistic. But you know, I have this feeling that as long as people are involved, it's going to be difficult to create a utopia.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we're probably going to get Don't Look Up.
Right.
I don't know if you've seen that.
Right, yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that, but yeah. Like, I have a feeling that's what we're going to get. I'm with you on that one. I'm pessimistic about that.
Do we have any example of any society with all these attempts at creating utopias that has ever lasted in a positive way for more than 2 or 3 or 4 years? You know, I live in California, the land of the hippies and communes, you know, in the 60s, and 99% of them didn't really turn out all that well.
Boulder, I mean, okay, was like that, yeah, too.
Oh yeah, true. Colorado's,
and,
yeah.
And and yet, even with that vibe coming off of Boulder, Boulder is a surprisingly conservative town.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one could argue whether the U.S. was actually an attempt at that or not.
Mm-hmm. The whole country, right?
The whole country.
The founding principles, yeah. And look how that's turned out.
Exactly.
I mean,
like, I didn't
America
want to get it political, but like, yeah.
America is a great country. I still love my country, but, you know, it is a good example of how things can go sideways.
Yeah.
So the question is, what would have to change in order for people to not devolve into the dystopian, you know, that's why I asked the question, if we made contact with people or beings from another universe, would it sort of snap people into shape and stop worrying about petty things and money and that kind of stuff? I don't know.
I don't think so. I mean, we have a hard enough time connecting with or relating to people that are sometimes in the same country, but like opposite sides of the country, like in the US or like Europe and US, like if even on this planet. I mean, sometimes people even have a hard enough time within the village next over. Like, they, people feel distant, even if they are really close by. So I'm not so sure, because I mean, what does it make to make, what does it mean to make contact? That's maybe the question. I think we might find sign of a life, or we might even get a signal or something. But I don't think that would be communication.
Right. It's whatsoever. Not like we're going to sit down and have a conversation with being from 2,000 light years away, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we could, but we're going to sit there for a long time.
It's going to be a slow process.
Yeah. Hopefully we figured out eternal life, because that's going to be a slow process. Like, by the time you've said hello, 4,000 years have passed. So,
Mm-hmm. Well, so this is the British Technology Network. Is there any angle where technology could help guide a path? What kind of technology would help resolve some of those things we talk about? You know, we have social networks, so we should be able to connect with people, but that actually doesn't seem to help. It helps in some ways.
It does help a little bit. I mean, we are connected. So
sure, there's a lot of good things. Yeah, there's a lot of great things about being connected. Mm. And to me, you know, everybody's life is different, but to me, it's only 5 or 10% that's really negative. It's actually pretty easy to avoid.
That's, you know, true. Would better
communication tools, the ability, you know, if you could transport yourself to that universe 2,000 light years away, would it make a difference?
Probably would. I mean, just like the internet has made a difference. I mean, you can argue like all the bad things the internet has created, but it has created a lot of good things too. And true. One of the good
look
things
at us
is,
right
I
here.
Think, exactly. Yeah. Like we're right now talking across two continents. I mean, even you two are quite a bit like far away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not next door. So I would say that that's a good thing. And I would say yes, technology can help bridge that gap. And maybe, I mean, there are examples from the shows I've mentioned. I mean, whether it is some shape of faster light travel, which, well, so actually all three have one way or another. I mean, one uses those ring gates, like in the Expanse. The other two have like warp drives or hyperspace. Yeah. So there are, I think, a lot of examples for that. And I think that's also kind of shows our need to find a way to go to those places and communicate. Because, I mean, you see it even with Mars. We've seen Mars. We've explored small parts of it. But we have the need to go there ourselves. Even though it is incredibly hard, incredibly far away, still doable, but still quite far away. And it's a massive challenge that's going to take us quite a while to do. We still want to do it. Because there is at least for the moment, a value in being there in person.
Yeah, look how our attitude of the moon changed after we landed people on it, and how our attitude of Mars changed after all the rovers have been there. That's true. So it sounds like the common theme about technology with all this that we get from science fiction is the transportation part. You know, when you look at those images from the web and they show the galaxies that are bending, the space is bending, you know, now you think, well, maybe there is something to the science fiction about hyperspace, you know, things do kind of bend, you know, instead of going straight through, you kind of cut some corners. I don't know if we'll run into any portals or anything, but it seems more realistic when you see those pictures, you know.
No, for sure. I mean, in theory, at least it's possible. It's just a question of, can we figure it out? I think as I said, if we survive that long, which I'm not so sure about.
We're kind of an iffy phase right now.
I think we've entered that phase where we're either going to figure shit out or we're going to die. Phase is probably like, it's probably a long phase, but still. I think we are going to figure it out. If there's one thing we have shown, is that if we don't kill each other, we're very good at learning, understanding, and using it. And we, to some extent, understand some of the laws of physics to some level at least. So that is still a massive step to circumventing them or using them in a way, but I think that's understanding is step one. And you see that, I mean, we talked about like last couple of episodes even about like CPUs and the hardware limit, the physical limits that we've run into, and how we've constantly figured out new ways to still make progress and just do it. Like if one way doesn't work, we run into some issue, we'll just try another one.
So maybe we can't design a warp drive with an Intel processor, but maybe with a quantum computer, we can design one, right?
Yeah, it might be. Or we have another science fiction show that comes to mind is Hitchhiker's Guide. Maybe that is the way
we probability drive.
Exactly. Maybe that is the drive we need. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Like, I mean, I think that's the interesting thing. Like, we don't know. We have some ideas. Science fiction has shown us some direction things could go, but we don't know. And that's kind of exciting.
It is. Yeah. Patrice, I'm thinking that if we don't develop a practical way for humans to travel beyond our solar system, something like the Expanse without the ring gates mm-hmm. is a very plausible future for us, where you end up with governments based on groups of people that have moved to different parts of our solar system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so we ended up with the Mars government, we ended up with an Earth government, we have yeah. the asteroid belt government. And and if we end up with some sort of interaction with intelligent life that's not human, I think we'll end up with something that's more like Star Trek Enterprise, where okay. we have humans that are not very good at interacting with other species and become very xenophobic.
Or it could be like Lower Decks. Complete chaos.
Or complete chaos. Yeah. Yeah. And if we're able to overcome that xenophobia, and we have the ability to travel outside our solar system, then I think it'll be more like the Orville.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, my perspective, that's why I threw the Expanse in. I think that's probably, at least in the, let's say, short to middle term, even if that's probably a couple hundred years, mm-hmm. probably the most realistic one. We are probably eventually gonna leave this planet behind because there are things to be done, fortunes to be made, adventures to be had on other planets within our solar system, and eventually even in the belt. I think, I mean, we're mm-hmm. already sending probes and so on all over the place. Mm-hmm. And 100% that is going to create first local small factions and then governments and so on, states. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's almost inevitable. It might even on a planet like Mars, it might even be multiple. Who is to say there's only one Mars government? Like right. we have more than one government on Earth.
Yeah, that's true.
So can you have a colony on Mars without some way of figuring out how to build an atmosphere for humans? Is there any way?
Atmosphere for the planet? Probably that would be hard, but I mean, to have habitats and even quite big habitats, I'm relatively certain we could figure out. I mean, we've done that to some extent even on Earth. They're quite big structures that we have. I mean, Apple's spaceship campus is actually not a bad example for that. It's massive.
True.
Like, put a roof over the middle and you have quite a big habitat.
So you remember, when was it, the 70s when they did the what was it called? Biosphere?
Biosphere. Oh, that's still ongoing in Arizona. That's still ongoing. Biosphere 2 in Arizona.
Is it still there?
It's still there. I'm not sure they still run the experiment. I think they might have shut it down a couple of years ago.
You know,
but it's still there. You can still visit it.
From a scale point of view, it probably just wasn't big enough, mm-hmm. you know, to have enough plants to generate oxygen and all that kind of stuff. So if you... I see. So if you figured that out and you had like a 5,000 acre biosphere is what you're saying, mm-hmm. not the whole planet. That seems more practical.
Yeah.
More realistic.
Is it going to be completely independent? Who knows? I mean, even in the Expanse, Mars wasn't fully independent, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and then
and
also
the belt
like,
definitely wasn't.
the belt definitely wasn't. And still, that didn't stop people. I mean, going back a couple hundred years, like the first settlers in the US, I don't think they were fully independent. They were quite dependent on Great Britain at that point. And certain things that were produced there that were needed.
Yeah, I guess exploration on Earth has proven that there's always some percentage of the population that is willing to do that. The people who came to North America were willing to deal with a lot of hardships for whatever, you know, reason they wanted to get out of their country. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until, 100, 200 years later, until you had massive, you know, there was some tipping point of infrastructure here that allowed sort of the more normal people to come over.
Exactly.
More not normal.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we're going to probably not too far in the future see habitats on the moon.
Right.
That's already planned by NASA to some extent.
Which is a great testing ground for habitats for Mars.
Yeah, and I mean, that is full. I mean, that is probably going to be more or less fully dependent on Earth. And they're doing some experiments with like Mars sand rocks, whatever you want to call them, whether you can grow some things in them. There was an article recently about that. That they basically planted some seeds in them to see like, can you grow something with that? And actually was, from what I remember, quite successful.
Please tell me they planted potatoes.
Probably did, yeah. Probably did.
It has to be. The first crop on Mars has to be potatoes.
It's true, yeah. No, but as I said, like, I mean, to some extent, those will be dependent on Earth because they're, like, the environment simply isn't there.
So what would it take for ISS to turn into kind of a more long-term, more sustainable outpost on the moon? I mean, we have ISS, right? People go up there for months at a time anyway. Yeah. I'm not sure you'd want to live there for more than 6 months, though.
Oh, people have lived there for more than a year.
Yeah,
I'm saying, would you want to?
No.
Yeah.
No. Well, it might be quite interesting to do, but that's more a curiosity thing than like real.
So they're producing some of their own resources, certainly energy, right? And then, you know, you can produce some amount of water. Yeah,
water is recycled mostly.
Right. Mm-hmm. The food is a problem, clearly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're not really.
You have to send.
Right. They're not growing anything yet. But like you say, I'm sure somebody could figure out with a big enough base on Mars how to grow some food. I mean, on the moon.
Yeah. I think that's, I mean, the thing that you have is a lot of sun. The same thing you don't have is heat to some extent. And then obviously all the nutrients, like, it's nothing. but yeah, I think that's the idea that we will somehow figure that out.
We could take all the food waste on Earth, ship it to a agricultural base on the moon to get some nutrients in the soil, maybe.
Yeah, but that is really the problem with that, and I think that's why we have to do that, is it is relatively expensive to get anything off Earth.
Right.
It is, and that's why NASA is planning for the moon. Like they're planning for the moon not just to be a research base, but also kind of a testing ground and so on, but also a construction site to some extent.
And a resource center, right?
Yeah, because I mean, it is easier to do things there than to do them here on Earth and then ship them up, like send them up with a rocket.
Right, think how big the rockets are, you know, to get something into low Earth. It's still a pretty big rocket, but look at the rockets you need for even a small, you know, payload to Mars or the James Webb, right? That was a pretty big, it was a European rocket, I think. That was a pretty big rocket just to, you know, get it launched off.
That was one of the biggest rockets we have.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that it is necessary, but I think that's going to be a logical progression. Like we start with the moon, we go to Mars. Eventually, we might go more often to Mars or have more missions. And then some people might say, let's do something permanent there because it's quite expensive to come back. It takes a long time to get there. It takes a very long time to go back. So why would we not stay if we can? I mean, it's the whole idea of the Martian, basically.
Right.
Well, some of it to say, okay, let's stay there for a while.
Yeah, I don't think Matt Damon chose to stay there for a while, right?
No, he didn't.
No, but so from in terms of technology, we're talking about transportation, rockets or whatever is better than rockets, biology and chemistry. I mean, we haven't talked much about any kind of electronic stuff. Are we good enough with most of, you know, in terms of communication? It would be nice to communicate faster to Mars, but maybe that's not such a big deal. Maybe that's not the long tent in the pole, right?
I mean, would it be nice to have higher bandwidth, bigger, like better communication? I mean, if we can break the speed of light, then that would be really good. But I mean, right now we're basically bound by speed of light.
Right. So that means 8 minutes to between Earth and Mars, basically,
for a
one-way communication.
Yeah, and until we can, I mean, that also means like a video call like this one is not going to be doable until we break speed of light. And that's something I really liked about The Expanse. They dealt really well with that light delay, and that like they had sometimes like real-time communications when they were really close by and you had like less, basically no delay.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the show was basically sending video messages back and forth.
Yeah,
I think that's quite realistic. I mean, maybe we'll rely less on video and more on text because it's smaller and faster and easier to do. I think it'll be text.
Yeah. I think it'll track the way communication on the internet is tracking for us, where initially it's primarily a text thing, and then it's audio becomes part of it. And now here we are where video is basically a standard.
Yeah. But as I said, it's not going to be live. As I said, unless we figure out a way to send faster than light communication somehow, it's not going to be real time.
Yeah. And I'm not a physics expert, but I've never seen anything that suggests we're going to be able to crack that code anytime in the next 50 years.
Probably not. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you never know. Like maybe today someone was born who has a brilliant idea in like 15 years and could be. But it doesn't look like it. Let's put it this way.
But we don't
have enough understanding, I think, of the physics behind it even to have an idea what direction we could take.
It's still even, you know, 8 minute delay to Mars doesn't seem like the deciding factor in whether or not you can put a biological pod on Mars. That doesn't seem to be the biggest problem. It's all the other stuff.
Yeah. That's it. I mean, there's one thing and this just came to mind. And I mean, we're not physicists, so I don't know how realistic that is, but quantum entanglement might be one way. I mean, there are some books, Ender's Game and so on. They have a communication network basically that is instantaneous across vast distances.
I forgot about that.
That is based on quantum entanglement, basically.
You know,
I mean, some magic and quantum entanglement. But
without quantum entanglement, if we want to go beyond Mars in our own solar system, I think we need to have a solid self-sustaining system on Mars, because it would be much more practical to launch missions to the moons of the gas giants.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
If you're starting at Mars instead of starting at Earth. And right. it also cuts down on the lag time for transmissions, because now you're transmitting back to Mars, not all the way to Earth.
Yeah. And I mean, the same for if you want to go into the asteroid belt, like the closer you are, the better it is.
Mm-hmm.
Still quite a distance, but it's better. And I mean, just think about what we could see that we cannot see right now, because we get a different perspective.
Right.
Because it's another planet.
And as I'm thinking this through, I'm realizing, well, there'll be times where Mars will be substantially farther away than Earth. Mm-hmm. So we have to have the matching infrastructure here, which we basically already have, so that when Mars is too far away, communication is still more plausible because now Earth is closer.
Yeah,
we always have to be mindful of the distances, though.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, it just blows you away when you think, isn't James Webb is a million miles away, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that took...
And it's nothing.
Right, and that's nothing in comparison to what we're talking about. So I think the transportation angle, I mean, if you were trying to get resources from the moon to Mars, to get enough resources, you'd basically have to have a continuous chain of rockets going from Earth to moon and moon to Mars or moon to Mars. Mm-hmm. It would just take you years and years and years to, you know.
I mean, that was, I think, in The Martian, there was basically a continuous stream of missions,
rockets.
Of rockets. I mean, it takes, was it best case scenario, 6 months?
6 or 9, was it 9 months that they were talking?
Something, I think it depends a little bit, but I think the window like is six to nine months, I think. I mean, depending also on your speed.
Right.
Like if you're sending something that like it's not humans, you travel a little bit faster.
That's so, true. If like it's that. Just payload, right?
Yeah, stuff like that. So yeah, there's a lot of potential. That being said, there's quite a few TV shows that have good ideas there.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, I'm gonna say the warp drive idea, the transportation is the biggest breakthrough that has to happen. And after.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing science fiction and seeing the web images, I guess I'm more optimistic about some big breakthrough there than I was 20 years ago.
Yeah. But if you think about that, like human history, the biggest difference has happened due to changes in transportation.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
Like when we invented the wheel and all of a sudden we could go and like used horses and stuff like that, we could go farther distance, and then we invented cars and faster
ships,
cars and ships and all of the
right.
planes mm-hmm. and all of that.
Yeah,
yeah, don't
that
discount
has made
the
a big
value
difference.
Of the sail in,
right.
in
oh,
human
yeah.
advancement.
Yeah, I mean, a lot, I think that was Horace Daly who said that like all major advancements somehow had a connection to transportation. Because transportation made it even possible to do that.
So you're saying we're not the first to come to this conclusion.
Oh no. For sure not.
But who has done it as eloquently as us?
That's true. That is true. Yeah, it's I mean, for me, the James Webb had the opposite effect, that I had my doubts that we are going to break that, because even if we can find a way to bend things and whatever warp drives, the distances are massive.
Right.
I mean, even within if within our solar system they're massive, then you think about the next solar system over, which is even further. There's a lot of nothing in between, and then like our galaxy and another, like it's just unless we figure out something really crazy where it's like, okay, I can go from any point to any point in an instant. I don't think we're ever going to go anywhere past, I don't know, I think even our galaxy is already a stretch.
Even our solar system is.
No,
we still haven't left our solar system.
Right,
no,
barely.
Probes.
Barely, yeah.
Barely.
Well,
left,
they're in that transition area.
Right.
No,
right.
They left that. They left that behind recently.
Well, yes, they left that part behind. But now there's that blended area where we've gone past the barrier for our solar system. And now there's kind of the wake of our solar system. And one probe is kind of deep in that, and the other is just at the edge of it because of the angles they're going at. So they have to leave that wake before they've really left.
Yeah,
and it took 40 years to get there.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, to be fair, if we wanted to go to the next solar system over, I think we could figure that out within the next 30, 40, 50 years. It's 4 light years away. With going, I mean, sending something, probably not going ourselves,
right?
Because humans, because I mean, all we need to do is figure out a way to speed things up fast enough.
Yeah, that's true. We're talking
and
about
it sounds
the
easy and it's not.
So 4 light years. Wow.
Yeah,
I
think
it's still
we could
friggin' way.
That's at line speed. So even if we did half that speed, it would take like a lot of time. And we probably, I mean, and then speeding up and slowing down and all that. So, but I think that's something we could figure out if we wanted to.
I always have this image about some massive journey like that, and we're getting within a couple of months of getting to the next solar system, and a rocket hits the probe. A rocket hits the probe, right?
100%. I mean, how many probes did we even send to Mars, and that is relatively close by and relatively well known by now. And how many probes did we send?
We still bounce. Bounced a few off the surface.
Yeah.
Well, from that standpoint, it would probably be easier to send a probe 4 light years than to land a probe on the moon.
Yeah, that's true.
Landing on Mars is incredibly difficult.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If there was no atmosphere, it'd be so much easier.
Right.
If there was a much thicker atmosphere, it'd be so much easier.
Right.
But the atmosphere is, there's just enough to be a total pain in the ass.
Yeah. I mean, the moon ultimately wasn't, from what I've seen and heard, not that hard. I mean, it was very hard in the beginning because we had never done it before. We had no math for it. We had no nothing for it, really. But once we figured that part out, it wasn't super hard because there's no atmosphere. There's nothing really
that could
prevent you from doing anything.
The hard part, it
barely has gravity, so it like.
Yeah, the hard part was Neil Armstrong was flying in a tin can with an Atari joystick. Right?
Yes, exactly. And the math even required to get to that point, because that's not simple math. Oh, I go from here to the next town over like point A, point B, straight line. That's not how that works in space.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Like orbital dynamics are quite.
That's quite a lot of the math.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. We could figure that out.
I mean, we joke about it, but they couldn't push on the walls of their spacecraft because they could put their hand right through.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. That always amazes me. I guess we saw a little bit of that in the Martian movie, right? The habitat pod was very flimsy.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't get angry and like put your
punch
your
the fist wall. Through.
It's not good. Like you're gonna die.
Yeah, that would be a very bad life choice.
So that means we can't have married couples in the habitat because you know somebody's going to throw a pot at somebody at some point.
That's easy to fix. No pots allowed in the habitat.
Oh, that's an idea. Yeah. Or it's the pots are only foam or something.
Nerf pots.
Nerf pots. There we go.
Yeah, but as I said, like I think realistically, that's like the expanse is where we're going.
I'm with you. I think it's more
over a couple hundred. I mean, I don't think the timeline from Star Trek is realistic. I mean, we should have, what was it, World War III by now? I'm not that far off, actually.
Well, World War III in Trek timeline has already happened, except that they kind of retconned that with Picard, World War III is coming up.
Yeah,
because you have to have the eugenics wars, which
we haven't even had those,
which spin <90s. laughs> out of the second U.S. Civil War, and
wasn't that in the 90s or supposed to be in the 90s? I think
in Trek all the way up to Picard, at the mid to late 90s. And then the eugenics wars are over, and Khan takes a bunch of his eugenic soldiers in a space transport and leaves the planet
and survives that stuff like that, even though we don't have even like warp drives or anything. Like,
yeah, well, that was not a warp drive ship, but there's a problem with that because it was much farther out than it could be without a warp drive when the Enterprise finds it. But then Picard, they changed the whole time scale on that because the Civil War hasn't happened. Eugenics wars haven't happened. World War III hasn't happened. So, yeah.
Yeah, as I said, the timeline, I don't think it's realistic. It's. I mean, it's fine because it's distant for us, distant future, and we think, I mean, actually, that's quite interesting. We usually overestimate the things that are closer and underestimate the things that are farther away. So maybe it is realistic, and we just don't know
point.
It.
That's a good point. When I was a kid, it was 2001 Space Odyssey. That was in 69? Mm-hmm. So it was 30 years away?
Yeah.
I guess it wasn't that far off. It was
actually,
parts of it came true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, 2001 Space Odyssey. I mean, they were doing all of the effects and the lunar landing stuff, all that. Right. We had never set foot on the moon.
Right.
So it must have been before 69. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think, I forget the year. Maybe it was released about then, but you're right. It was definitely before the moon landing. They had things like video calls. But then they have the, you know, the gravity thing. You have a spaceship where you have gravity, like the Martian, you know.
68, by the way.
68, okay.
Okay, so it was a year before the moon landing. I mean, right. At that point, it was, let's say, conceivable that we would do it. But we hadn't done it yet.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, but I said, they're actually quite close to reality. But I said, the time scales usually, I mean, we mess up. But I don't think we will figure out... Like, we will not get to the point where Enterprise even was, or Star Trek Next Generation was. In the, what was it, 24th century?
Yeah, TNG is 24th century.
Yeah. Yeah, and, I don't think we will get that far and be that advanced in. Huh. And then again, if you think back like 300 years, is it 300? Yeah, 300, about 300 years.
Yeah, and Enterprise is... about what, 130 years?
Yeah, that feels a little close. A little bit at least.
Yeah, it's not that far away, really, 100 years.
I said, I mean, and then again, you think back, I said 130 years. And well, it looks like primitive times.
Yeah,
we're all riding horses.
What we accomplished in less than 100 years. We went from covered wagons to space shuttles.
Yeah, right. A little bit more. That was actually a little bit more than 100 years. We had the first cars in the late 1900s, I think.
Well, we went from the Wright brothers to the moon in 63 years, right?
That is true, yeah. From not being, I mean, we had rockets to some extent, a little bit at least in between.
Sort of, yeah, fireworks anyway.
Yeah, fireworks, exactly. We had something in direction, but yeah, you're right. Like from not flying to going to another party even. Like that's true. And that was 60 years. 60 years and two wars.
Two wars, yeah, two big wars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think
it's interesting to look at the sci-fi, which is looking near term, you know, like the Martian. Mm-hmm. You know, how long till we get to the Martian? Is that really reachable in 20 years? I forget what time it was.
I think it was like, yeah.
I'm enjoying the alternate history for spaceflight in For All Mankind.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what would have happened if we had, like, really kept this push for spaceflight happening, and they're in the 1994, and the United States, a private company, and the Soviet Union, which hadn't fallen.
Spoilers, by the way.
Oh,
we should warn.
I mean, if you've seen season two, you already knew the Soviet Union. It was So you have two nations and a private company in a space race to Mars,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by the way, the Martian 2035, so that's 13 years from now.
Yeah, that's too close.
I would say doable.
Okay, for what they have going on in the Martian, where it's multiple missions, just like on a conveyor belt, essentially, it's too early for that, but not for us to be on Mars.
Yeah, right. I mean, I would say for us to be on, I could see, let's put it this way, 2035, maybe not, but not that far off. Maybe it's a couple of years.
Maybe, yeah, I would say.
Yeah.
You could convince me of 20 or 25. 13 is a little bit short, but 20 or 25 maybe.
Yeah, 13 is a bit short. Yeah, I mean 13 for the first people on Mars. I could definitely see.
Sure.
Yeah, but was the fourth or the fifth mission or something, or the third? It wasn't even the first mission.
It was not the first. I remember that.
Yeah.
Well, as long as Elon can be the first one there and he can be the alpha tester, I'm okay with that. You know, we could start that next year as far as I'm concerned.
We can start it next year? Week if
now.
You want.
Today, let's just say
that. Yeah.
Yeah. And the good thing, no Twitter and Mars.
Yet. By the way, if you want a good laugh today, look up the Twitter filing on the lawsuit against Elon Musk. Read that. It's hilarious.
It is. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, what other options do we have? Like, we've talked about some of the like, say, more realistic short-term ones. I mean, the Martian. There is Andy Weir's Project Hail Mary. I don't even remember what year that is set in, but it's not that far off from now.
I don't remember the year either, but
maybe it's
even boy, that was a good book.
Yeah, that was a good book, but it's also a possible future, like that we actually a future where we meet aliens.
Mm-hmm.
We figure out a way to leave our solar system and we meet aliens.
It's
so the basic
it's not faster than light travel, by the way. It's not faster than light travel.
It's not.
So,
So the idea of sort of taking these steps, you know, we send probes to Mars now, we figure out how to handle the resource and transportation part, maybe by staging at the moon.
Hmm.
You can always send probes as far as you want, you know,
mm-hmm.
do a 2020 version of the Voyager or Viking. Was it Viking or Voyager? I get them mixed up.
Voyager,
you know, 2020 version, send it off and see how long it takes to get to the next solar system. In the meantime, you're building up the infrastructure. You know, it's like the Belt and what is it? The China calls. Yeah, just, you know, create the hops from here to the moon to Mars, Mars to Titan or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Improve the transportation.
Yeah.
You know, it's that the thing you mentioned though, getting the payloads off the Earth is going to be the hard part. Once we crack that or get enough resources on the moon where it can kind of self-generate some resources, then the ball really gets rolling.
And I think that's one of the reasons why we will probably, like in The Expanse, go to the asteroid belt sooner.
Right.
I mean, we've already sent probes. And I think we're going to start doing that more and more because, I mean, yes, they're far out, but it's still easy. That is probably still easier than sending something up. Like, I think the idea is right now to figure out a way to capture one of them, bring them closer to us, and then mine them for resources, which we're very good at, to be honest. I mean, we look at our planet, what we've done to it.
Right.
I think that's the part that we're very good at, like extracting resources from a rock.
There are a lot of good rocks in the asteroid belt, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, and it's easier to do, at least I've heard, it's easier to do that than to send up all of that equipment from our planet. Once we have all of that material, then we can on the moon or on Mars, like it's actually easier to send it down. We don't need it necessarily on Earth, but on other planets, like we could have a like production factory on Mars or on the moon or wherever, like, or even in space. Like if, I mean, again, a lot of shows have that where they have their space docks.
Mm-hmm.
Like why send it to any planet? Orbiting
refineries.
Yeah, just put it in orbit around the Earth
wherever. Or wherever, and then just build the stuff there. Right. And I mean, with the automation that we have these days with robots and everything, I don't think that's unrealistic anymore.
I just don't want it to end up like some Boston Dynamic robot dystopia on this thing orbiting
not
the Earth.
Not Terminator. Let's not go down the Terminator path. Don't do Terminator. Or
so that's one we don't
the
want,
Matrix Terminator. Path.
Or the Matrix, right.
Yes, that would be very bad too. Yes. There are some good examples like where like, okay, this is the one you don't want. Even in Star Trek, there are some examples in Picard in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
There are some examples where it's like, okay, we don't want that. Like the whole synthetics. Line like arc where like they get banned because we don't even know exactly what happened, but they somehow revolted or killed people.
Yeah, well, I think one bit of advice is if somebody hands you a jar of green liquid and they say, here, drink some Soylent Green, then you're in trouble.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Also, alien we don't want, by the way.
We don't want alien. No.
That's a bad one.
Alien, there was, what was it? Event Horizon was really bad.
that was bad, too. Yeah. Yep.
Planet of the Apes wasn't very good either.
No.
Not for humans, anyway.
Not for humans,
anyway. Not for humans. Nope.
It was good for the apes.
Yeah, the apes were okay. Charlton Heston had a problem with it, I think.
Yeah, he did have some issues. Yeah. Yeah. You know what I don't have issues with? The fact that Tio Soho sponsors us, which is absolutely awesome. What they do is provide people the hosting they need for websites and the bandwidth they need, which works out perfectly because we need bandwidth to stream shows like this every week. And we need the hosting space for our website and for the file so that everyone can go and watch and listen at their leisure. So it works out beautifully. And they're so generous. They're just giving us that resource. And which means we don't have to build a spaceship, go out to the asteroid belt and mine our own resources. We just get to take advantage of their generosity. That was a real stretch there, but I'm okay with it. Anyhow, so what they're asking of us is super easy. This would have been a better place for talking about having to fly out to asteroids and back, because that would be a lot more difficult than what they actually are asking us to do, which is go out on social media and give them a thank you for being here supporting the British Tech Network. And so please go do that. Now, if it turns out that you actually need to have a website hosted, you need to buy a domain name, hit them up and use the discount code BTN20 and you'll get a discount on their services, which is awesome. That's even more generous. So thank you to Tio Soho for being our sponsor. And Patrice, do you mind telling people where they can find the chat?
Oh, absolutely. And I was just thinking, like, social media would be so much better if we were on multiple planets, because like there would be no live discussions and some people might not even be able to participate at all. So that's good.
This sounds really good to me.
Sounds good. But I mean, as long as we are still on this planet, or in close proximity at least, so you can do live discussions with us, you can do that. And we have a live chat for that for our shows. And the shows are every Thursday at 7 p.m. UK time for the big show, and also Fridays 4 p.m. UK time for the Mac show. You might have to convert that to moon time or wherever you are. Mm-hmm. That's up to you. But if you're joining us live, head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com. That's it. As long as you are within, say, probably like 1 or 2 second light delay distance from us, shouldn't be a problem to talk to us live. After that, might get a little bit more difficult. But let's say you are listening to this on Mars or on another planet, or, I mean, God forbid, on like Alpha Centauri or something. Who knows? Who knows how long this episode is going to be out?
On your way to an asteroid.
It could be, yes. I mean, who knows how long people are going to listen to this gem of an episode and probably laugh at us because they're like, oh, they had no clue, which is normal. You can still get to the chat and see what we talked about and how little clue we had. And in order to do that, you head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And then there is a little calendar that pops up. It's an Earth-based calendar, I'm sorry. So you will have to do some conversions for that. I don't know, maybe we have star dates by now, or whatever other system of calendars we've figured out. And then, but as I said, on Earth in the year 2022, today is the 14th of July. And if you pick that in the calendar, then you will get to see everything we've talked about.
Awesome.
See, I made it fun and relevant.
You did. That was wonderful.
It's quite fun.
That was awesome. We are almost up on an hour already. So, yeah. So, Patrice, where can people find you?
Yeah, once again, for now, we're on this planet. If I could leave, I might actually consider that sometimes. I'm like, not sure I want to stay here.
I can appreciate that.
But until, I mean, as long as I'm here, you can find everything I'm doing on thepatrice.com. Maybe I'll post the announcement there when then I'm like, I'm out of here. I'm going to Alpha Centauri. Bye-bye. I don't know. You can find all of that social media, links to projects, podcasts. If you want to buy me a coffee to finance my like ticket to Alpha Centauri, I don't know. If you want to get rid of me, feel free. Like, I'll take money. You can find all of that on thepatrice.com. You can also find me every week here on The Big Show on Thursdays and The Mac Show on Fridays. And also, I'm interviewing really interesting people currently from Earth. If we get in touch with aliens and they eat food, I'm also interested in their stories. But right now, it's on foodieflashback.com. I interview people about food and their food-related stories and memories.
Awesome. Awesome. Tom, where can people find you?
People can find me in the BTN Slack. I'm on Twitter at TVF_SFBay. And Patrice, I can't wait for the first alien food episode of Foodie Flashback.
That would be awesome. So if an alien is listening, like, please get in touch. Hopefully soon, because I don't know if I'm going to be alive in 5,000 years.
Right. Yeah. No, I totally am looking forward to that alien recipe episode.
Me too.
Yeah. Okay. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Jay Gamut on both. YouTube.com/JayGamut for occasional videos. And most Tuesdays on Mac Voices Live, here on Thursdays with all of you amazing people for The Big Show. Most Thursday evenings on In Touch with iOS. Then back on Fridays for The Big Show. And then Brian Chaffin and I do The Context Machine. So that's a blast too. Totally unrelated to all of that, if you are going to WordCamp US, which is in September, and you didn't get a ticket, well, you're not alone, because most people I think that are going actually weren't able to get a ticket. I've put together a Slack for everyone so we can coordinate all of our own activities. So if you're interested in getting in that Slack and you're going to WordCamp US, send me a DM on Twitter and I will get you into that.
That sounds like a lot of fun and a very Jeff Gamut thing to do, like going to a conference without a ticket.
Never let the fact that you don't have a pass to get into an event stop you from going.
That's good life advice.
Yep. And so we're calling, and I say we because it kind of evolved out of group discussions. You know how you have the hallway track at conferences? Well, we have the taco track. Because San Diego's known for quality tacos.
Oh, 100%.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes. And I've even made a WAPU for nice. The taco track.
Nice.
Patrice, I'll send tacos. You the WAPU so you can see.
Please.
So anyhow, it's going to be a lot of fun. And okay. Thank you to everyone that is here watching live. And participating in the chat room. All of you are awesome. Everyone that watches or listens later, thank you for being part of this as well. You are absolutely fantastic. And thank you to TSO hosts again for being here and supporting us. Give them some online love and thank them for being here to help us make all our shows possible. And don't forget about the photo show. Check that out. It's a lot of fun. And all of you that are still sending in money to keep the daily news show happening, thank you for being part of that. And all of you, you just totally rock. So there we go. That was a fun show. So thanks again to everyone. And be sure and tune in tomorrow for the Mac Show. And have an awesome weekend. And we'll see you again.